Evan McMullen, independent candidate for president, is possibly on the cusp of doing something no so-called third-party candidate has done in decades. That is win a state. We're talking about Utah, where McMullen is neck and neck with Donald Trump in the latest polls, even leading in one or two. Evan McMullen is a former CIA operative, business professional, House GOP's chief policy director. He was born in Provo, graduated high school in Washington State, earned his bachelor's degree at Brigham Young University and an MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Evan McMullen joins us now. Thank you.
Great to be with you, Tom.
So you're leading or close in Utah. No candidate without an R or a D after their name has won electoral college votes in a state for decades. Is this wildest dreams? Is this something you kind of expect and hope for? Where does it fall?
Well, the historical precedent is certainly interesting, but we're very focused on the implications of this race, and we're competing where we can with the resources we have. The Mountain West is a place where voters turned down or rejected Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton by large margins, and so we're focused on giving the American people a better choice, a better option in this election. And we find that our message resonates best, especially in the Mountain West.
What is that message?
Well, that message is, first of all, that Mindy Finn, my running mate, and I are the only true conservatives in this race, or at least conservative ticket. Donald Trump is not a conservative. Our message is that it's time for a new conservative movement that embraces the truth that all men and women are created equal, and the foundational ideals that enshrined in our Constitution and in our Declaration of Independence, that we all have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And those ideas are very powerful. They're responsible for our nation being as prosperous and powerful as it's become, the most prosperous and powerful on earth. And these are key to our future, too. And we look at policies that come from that, and we believe that in order to ensure individual liberty, we've got to have a limited government. We've got to have our fiscal house in order. We need to return power to the states. These kinds of things. On the equality side, we believe that too many people from minority groups and even in the case of Donald Trump, an entire gender, women specifically, have been alienated by our leaders, and it's time to have more inclusive, unifying leadership. And that's what we've been talking about for the last 2.5 months.
You were touted as finally a never Trump candidate. I expect that you feel your candidacy is more than that, but was that the foundation? Is that why you got in initially?
Well, yeah, I appreciate the question because it's an easy thing for people to say that we're the never Trump candidates. But, we're opposed to Trump, but we're opposed to Trump on principle, first and foremost, but also because we knew that he would not be able to compete effectively with Hillary Clinton. Look, I believe that Hillary Clinton is one of the most corrupt politicians that a major party has nominated in modern times, at least. And Donald Trump is so bad, for reasons that I've mentioned earlier and many others, he cannot compete successfully against her. And all of the projections show, and unless the polls are wrong or unless something dramatic happens, Donald Trump is about to be defeated by a large margin in the Electoral College. And we warned of this. We warned that if Republicans and conservatives abandoned their principles in order to support somebody like Donald Trump, that it would not have it would not end well, and indeed it will not. And so we're opposed to both of them, and we believe they both personify a leadership crisis in this country, and we firmly believe that, again, it's time for a new conservative movement and a new generation of leaders in this country.
It's looking less likely that some of the battleground states we thought would be very close will be that close.
That's right.
But I wonder if you had pushback earlier on, people in battleground states who say, well, boy, I really would like to vote for you, Mr. McMullen, but I feel like if I vote for you, I'm throwing my vote away, and the person I, like more or dislike more will get in.
Well, there was some of that. That's right. But when I got into the race, Donald Trump was down by 10 points, according to, I think it was an NBC poll. So he was already losing badly. And look, I knew that he was destined to win badly, regardless of what an independent candidate like myself did. But yes, we've gotten that question. But look, the reality is this. if the race is very, very close, and we, Mindy and I, are able to win a state or two, that can result in our being able to block both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So if the race is very close, again, voters can block both of them. If the race isn't close and Hillary Clinton wins by a massive margin, which looks like the most likely scenario at this point with 15 days left, well, then, of course, it doesn't matter what the outcome is so much in any given state. And in that case, again, we're asking people to vote their conscience, to stand on principle, and if Mindy and I can earn it, vote for us.
Maybe flesh out that scenario, looking less likely, as you say, but if the vote is close, what would that scenario look like, and is there a scenario where you end up winning the presidency?
Well, yes, the scenario is, the race in the general election or in the Electoral College is very, very close, meaning that, sort of 50-50 in terms of state's Electoral College votes. If that's the case, then you could potentially win one state with, for example, six Electoral College votes, and that could be enough to block them both. Of course, the more states you can win, the better your chances of blocking them both, and the smaller, the bigger the margin can be. Right now, the margin between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is so gigantic, though, that it's not close, as I said over and over. But if it were that close and we were able to win a state or two, and we were then able to block them both from getting a majority, the top three finishers in the race in the Electoral College would then proceed to the House of Representatives, where each state would get a vote. And Mindy and I like our chances there, again, because we're the only true conservative ticket in the race. And we believe the race would reset to a degree then, and we would get equal coverage as Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And then I believe that Republican states would think again and cast many of them votes for Mindy and I. And then I believe the Democrats would understand that they wouldn't have the votes to elect Hillary Clinton. And so in practical terms, their choice would be between me and Donald Trump. And I believe that they would rather see me in the White House, as would the conservatives, many of them, than Donald Trump. So we like our chances of being a conservative consensus candidate in that scenario, and that's what we'll be driving for if we're able to block them both.
What does your success in Utah and your close or leading in polls, looks like you might win six electoral votes. What does that success say about Utah, do you think?
Well, I think it says something about the values of Utah and the people of Utah, and I think a lot of this applies to the broader Mountain West. And let me be clear that it applies to many Americans across the country. I mean, we are focused in the Mountain West now because we're independent candidates and our resources are limited, and a three-month campaign is just a reality, and we need to be smart and thoughtful about how we use those resources. But the truth is that we have a lot of supporters in Wisconsin and Virginia and Iowa and Florida and elsewhere, and Texas. So, and in other states. So we've got this, we've got a national organization and supporters across the country. But look, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump were rejected soundly in the primaries in the Mountain West. And I think the reason is that people don't believe that these are the kinds of people we should have leading our country. They see that Hillary Clinton is self-serving and corrupt. And in the case of Donald Trump, they see that he's not a true conservative. These are conservative states. Yes, they tend to vote for the Republican nominee, but the Republican nominee tends to be a conservative. In this case, the Republican nominee isn't a conservative. And while some may go along with Donald Trump anyway, the people in the Mountain West aren't going to do that, many of them at least. And we'll see on Election Day how it plays out. But a lot of them are true principled conservatives who also care about their fellow man and woman. And when they see Donald Trump attacking people based on their gender or their race or their religion or whether they happen to have a disability or whatever it may be, it just doesn't sit well with people here at all. And so it's no surprise that he's performing badly here and that people are giving us a look and joining our cause.
What is your advice for voters? They go in and they cast a ballot for Evan McMullen at the top of the ticket. What about the down ballot candidates? Do you advise people? Do you expect people who vote for you will then down ballot vote for Republicans by and large?
Yes, we think they will vote for conservatives, and those will tend to be Republicans, yes. And, we do hope that for all the troubles that the Republican Party has, and for all the, you know, all the disappointment I have that the Republican Party has continued to stand with someone like Donald Trump, who has had a racist, misogynist, xenophobic campaign, and who has divided our country even as a candidate. I've been very disappointed by the fact that they've stood with him. But yes, you know, we hope that people will vote for conservative candidates, and most of our voters are conservatives. Although I will say that, you know, we do have some people from the left, and Bernie Sanders people in particular, who come to us and say, look, we know we don't agree with you on all the issues, but we trust you, and we realize that what you're doing is in the public interest, and we're going to support you, and we welcome those people too. But that hasn't changed our views on issues. We're committed conservatives that believe in the equality of all human beings, and that they all should have liberty to pursue happiness as they like.
What do you think happens to the Republican Party after, you know, after November 8th? Is there a new Trump wing to the party? Is it fractured? What do you think happens going forward?
Well, there is a tendency to look at this and say, okay, this is something new as of Donald Trump. It's uncertain what the future will hold because of that. But I don't think that's the case. The reality is that some of the issues, the problems within the party have existed much longer than Donald Trump, and he was able to identify them and come exploit them. But the truth is, after 2012, at least, the party looked at its loss in the presidential election and said, you know, what do we need to do what changes do we need to make to have success next time? And the lessons were that they needed to appeal to women and to minorities and to millennials better than they had in the past. The reality is that then they spent the next 4 years failing to do that. And Donald Trump, for very real reasons that people, you know, some of the base of the Republican base, not all, I want to make that very clear, not the Republicans I grew up with, but some in the Republican base in some parts of the country were not on board with those changes. And Donald Trump identified that and was able to come in and exploit them, as well as, you know, he did give voice to people who had been, I believe, forgotten, and giving voice to them is a good thing. But then he took it farther and combined their frustrations with bigotry and misogyny and xenophobia. And that was not healthy, and that was not good for our country. But these problems existed before this, you know, presidential campaign in the Republican Party. Unfortunately, I think they're likely, even more likely to exist now that Donald Trump has empowered people with these ideas and these voices within the Republican Party voting base. And so the chances that they'll be able to make changes, that the party will be able to make changes, are slim. Mindy and I are saying that we're leaving the door slightly open to that possibility, but we think they are very slim, having both of us worked to change the party in the past. So we're saying that we need a new conservative movement in that country. In this country, the question is really around whether we need a new party so that conservatives can have, you know, their ideas represented. Because if the Republican Party can't represent conservative ideas, the kind of conservatism that we're describing, well, then it will be necessary for a new party to form.
So you think that's a possibility? And how likely do you think that is to happen? And would you be involved in such a movement if there were such a conservative party or some new conservative movement?
Yeah, well, look, absolutely it's possible. For people like me and Mindy and so many others who are constitutional conservatives, who believe that all people are created equal and who are truly committed to the cause of liberty, which, by the way, is something that, you know, people have never been more empowered ever before in any other generation than we are now, and than millennials are in particular. And we have this bloated, centralized government that pushes down uniform solutions to the entire country. There's a coming clash between the empowerment of individuals that's happening very naturally and that is true to I think, basic natural law, as Thomas Jefferson described it. All, you know, the human mind was created free. So we have an issue there developing that I think is going to continue to empower those who are committed to liberty and equality. And if the Republican Party can't represent that, then people like us, people who I would call constitutional conservatives, they are going to have to find or create another political vehicle for their movement. I mean, it's just absolutely the case. Will I be a part of it? I imagine in some capacity I will. What that capacity is, I don't know. But if the Republican Party can't recommit itself to the truth of equality of all people and to the cause of liberty, then yes, I think a new party will ultimately have to be created.
Would such a party replace the Republican Party, or given the institutional makeup of the U.S. politics, could a third party be successful?
Well, let's remember that the Republican Party hasn't existed forever. There was the Whig Party, and the Whig Party wanted to reinstitute slavery, and so some people broke off and started the Republican Party, and then Abraham Lincoln joined it a couple of years later, and now we've known the grand old party to be the Party of Lincoln, and those are tremendous roots that we should all be proud of. But we find ourselves here in 2016. Forgetting or not being committed to equality and fighting for equality. Instead, we've got a Republican nominee who I believe does not believe all humans are equal. And so ironically and perhaps poetically, we find ourselves in a situation in which it may again be necessary to start a new political party to defend the truth that all humans are equal. What is most likely to happen, given the fact that Donald Trump has empowered these kinds of voices within the Republican Party so much, even if he loses, I think these voices will feel very empowered and will keep the party from making reforms. If that's the case, and if the party isn't able to attract more support from women and millennials and minorities, then sadly, I believe the party will begin to shrink and will become less powerful and less relevant, less able to win national elections, certainly less able to win the White House. And as that happens, this new party that I say is possible, certainly a new movement is certain, it's already happening, we're building it, but this new party, I believe, would start to overcome the Republican Party and take its mantle and ultimately become one of the two major parties if we're still left with the two-party system, but this may fracture the entire structure so that there are more than just two parties. By the way, I believe the Democratic Party is also headed for a similar struggle based on its support for a large centralized government, whereas you have millennials, for example, rejecting increasingly the idea that they're going to be one-size-fits-all solutions are acceptable from Washington, D.C. They're empowered, and that's what they expect, and I believe that the Democratic Party will have similar challenges in the future.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Evan McMullen, independent presidential candidate, and he is possibly on the cusp of doing something no third-party candidate has done in decades, that is win at least one state, and he could possibly win Utah's 6 electoral votes. Evan McMullen, I wanted to have you speak to millennials. I know some people who are older than millennials. I'm in my 50s. I'm concerned if this is perhaps your first election that you're tuning in for. Such a weird election, hardly any talk about policy. It's all about personality and two of the most unliked candidates in the country. Some people will come to you, of course, but millennials tuning in, my fear is that they'll just tune back out. What would you say to millennials?
Well, the truth is that we're in Utah, we're winning with millennials. We're even beating Hillary Clinton, and millennials tend to vote Democratic. But I don't think that it has to be that way, because, again, millennials are an empowered generation. They're empowered by technology. They know technology better than else. They incorporate it into their lives very naturally. They know that they can have an idea and spread it around the world in a matter of seconds. They know that they can build a business or build a movement very quickly. I mean, these are empowered people. There have never been more empowered people. And also, they've shed some of the old ideas of the past, and I keep harping on this, but sadly, I believe it's necessary in this campaign. Millennials accept each other and accept the equality of all people, of men and women, and people of different races and faiths. They're just more open to their fellow man and their fellow woman, and that's what our message has been. And I think that's why they're joining us. That's why, especially in Utah, where we've spent the most time and gotten our message out the best so far, they're joining our cause. And we find that to be the case around the country. When millennials hear about our message and what we're building, they want to be a part of it. And we are extremely humbled and grateful to have their support. But, we've also noticed that our support from the 60 years and older crowd has been very, very strong. And I'm not sure what to make of that. other than maybe these are people who have gained wisdom in their lives and in their years, and see that we cannot have Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump as a president. And if one of them is to be president, well, then we need to build something new for the future of our country.
When we learned we're going to have you on, we're recording this, but we did put out the word to our listeners that they could send in an email with questions, and we have a couple to get us into some policy issues.
Sure.
Refreshing change for this campaign.
Indeed.
This is from Jacob. He says, does Mr. McMullen have any proposals for fixing the problems that face the Federal Reserve?
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what problems he's referring to, but I can tell you what I think about the Federal Reserve and what changes I would like to see there. I would like a more transparent monetary policy. I'd like it to be rules-based. I think the way that could work, I mean, we need to be careful that it's not politicized, but what I would favor is that the Fed be required to articulate a rules-based monetary policy, and then we can give it power to make exceptions to those rules. But if so, I think we need to require that they come to Congress and explain, you know, why they're making changes or why they're making an exception or whatever. There needs to be more oversight and more transparency. I also do not support the Fed's bailout of specific firms. I don't think the lender of last resort that's not intended to mean that they will bail out companies that are no longer solvent. They need to concern themselves, the Fed does, with the money supply, with monetary policy specifically. The bailout should not be, you know, decided upon, if at all, if we do them at all. They certainly shouldn't be done by bureaucrats at the Fed who have no real accountability to the people through their elected representatives in Congress. So, that's my view on it.
Here's our next question. This is from Ted in Logan. He says, your website outlines the importance of mitigating climate change, protecting the natural environment by investing in basic research to help accomplish these tasks. The environment is important to Utah voters. According to Utah Foundation, a majority, 53% of Utahns, are quite concerned about the environment, rating their level of concern as a 4 or 5 on a 5-point scale. Given the importance of environmental issues to Utahns, my question to you is, do you believe the federal government should designate more land as protected space under government control, such as Bears Ears National Monument? How do you balance this in one way or other with the reality that approximately 65%, according to Time.com, of land in Utah is under some form of federal management? Thank you for your time and consideration. That's Ted in Logan.
Yeah, well, thank you, Ted, for the very thoughtful question. I'd like to explain where I come from on this issue. My father is a mountain climber, a mountaineer, and an outdoorsman. And when I was young, growing up I was born in Utah, but I was raised in a rural area outside of Seattle, Washington, and, you know, basically near the Cascade Mountains. And my dad would spend a lot of time up there, and so would I as a Boy Scout. But my dad taught me to care about the earth when I was young. He would recycle before hardly anyone was recycling. I mean, it was, you know, at first strange to watch him digging around in the trash, separating, plastics from other recyclables. But that's where I learned at a very early age that we had a stewardship for the earth. And he taught me that when we would spend time outdoors together. And that was our responsibility. And I've grown up believing that. I do believe that we do have a problem with climate change now. I do believe that we are contributing to it. I think we do need to limit our carbon emissions. But the way I approach it is that we need to invest more in the kind of technology and innovation so that we can limit our carbon emissions in a way that also allows our economy to continue to run and grow. You know, one of the biggest strengths of our country is its ability to innovate. And so if I were president, I would be investing more money in those technologies. I wouldn't be giving money to specific companies because I think that that opens up too much opportunity for corruption, as we saw with Solyndra and other such investments of the federal government. But I do think that we should invest in research institutions who are pursuing technologies that could make our use of energy more efficient and, in general, could decrease our carbon emissions.
I wonder, interactions with voters, you've been on the campaign trail since August 8th. What's driving people? Is it a single issue? Is it the two major party candidates? What's got people riled up and ready to go to the polls?
Well, I think part of it is the unfitness of the two major party candidates, but it's not that simple. I mean, you know, Jill Stein and Gary Johnson, they're running for their second time. They both have parties behind them, albeit third parties, but they still have the resources of a party behind them, which gives them a much better opportunity to carry their message forward. And, you know, we don't have any of that. And we've been in this race for 2.5 months. And so I think it's a testament to not only the fact that people are very frustrated, yes, but they were frustrated before we got into this race. It's a testament, I think, to our message, which, again, is one of equality and liberty, ultimately. And we can talk about all the specific policy issues that flow from there. But these two fundamental ideals and truths are what we're standing up for. And that is what are getting people excited about our candidacy. And I think that's what they're supporting most of all.
Do you wish you or someone like you had gotten in sooner? Given the success you seem to be having in Utah?
Well, I sure do wish somebody had gotten in sooner. You know, I've spent a lot of time trying to convince other people, members of Congress and others, to do this. And then there was an organization called Better for America who did the same thing. They talked to former presidential candidates. They talked to major business leaders, to senators in Congress and representatives there as well. And unfortunately, all of those people said no. There were generals who were asked. I encouraged a couple generals, you know, to do it, and they all said no, and they all had their own reasons, and you can't, you know, judge them harshly, I think, because it's such a personal decision whether you run for national office or not. But they said no, and I was disappointed by that, certainly. After the convention, or during the convention, I thought surely the delegates would succeed in removing Donald Trump or preventing him from becoming officially the nominee and putting somebody else up instead. When that didn't happen, finally I reached out in hopes that, you know, finally Better for America would have somebody to run. And unfortunately, I learned then that they still did not have anyone. And that's when they asked me to consider it. Now, you know, people ask me, well, why, Evan, didn't you get into it earlier? Well, look, the reality is that at the time, in the months ahead of the convention, people still were hoping a former presidential candidate would get into the race. They weren't looking at, you know, a guy like me, who no one had ever heard of, to step into this role. And I also thought it was best that it would be somebody who was already nationally known, because they would have a better chance of success that way. But this was part of my decision process, ultimately, when I knew that no one else was going to do this, that everyone had been given the chance, everyone who fit that bill had been given the chance. And I knew that time was absolutely short, ballot deadlines were passing. I knew that if I didn't say yes and do this, that it would not be done, and there would be no chance for it to be done, even as a long shot. And so ultimately, I believed that, look, if nothing else, it was important that somebody stand for the principles and truths that have made this country so special and so great. And if no one else was going to do it, that I would do it, that I would do it. And even if it meant that it was going to be harder for me than for other people, I judged that it still needed to be done. And so I got into the race.
You referenced a former major party candidate, perhaps referencing Mitt Romney. Did you encourage Mitt Romney to get in?
No, he's not one that I had contact with at that point, and I wasn't a part of that. But and I don't want to list names here, because it's you know, there's no reason to put people on the spot. But suffice it to say that a number of former presidential candidates had been approached, and you know, unfortunately, they decided not to move forward. But they have their own reasons, and I think we, you know, I have to respect that. It just is what it is, and no one else was going to do it. But, you know, one thing I've realized, having launched the campaign and now working with Mindy, my running mate, is just we really did need something new, perhaps somebody who wasn't beholden to the party. Part of the reason why others wouldn't step into this role is because they didn't want to go against the Republican Party. And that's a broader problem, and not all of them. Others have other reasons for it. But a lot of them didn't want to go against the party. They feared that, look, if I go against the party, I'll lose my seat in Congress, or, you know, I won't have these close relationships that allow me to get things done. It's just, you know, relationship to the status quo, relationship to the system as it is now. But unfortunately, that system, the two-party system, or at least these two parties, are not well serving the country as they nominate candidates that are so unfit for the responsibilities they seek. So it really took somebody who was willing to step out of that and say, okay, I know that I may burn a few bridges here, but I believe this is the right thing to do, and I'm going to do it anyway. And that's how I felt, and I think that's how Mindy felt as well.
Given this experience, will you do it again? Will you be running for office again?
I don't know. I like how you preface that question, given this experience. It certainly is. It's difficult. You really put yourself through the ringer, even in a three-month, or maybe especially in a three-month presidential campaign. I don't know if I'll run for any office again. I may or I may not. But what I'm more interested in is this movement that I speak of. I do firmly believe that it's time in this country for a new conservative movement. I believe that the kind of movement that Mindy and I are talking about, the kind of movement that we're building, that we have support for around the country, that is the kind of movement that can give this country the leadership that it needs. I want to be a part of that. Someone, people will need to run for office as a part of that, obviously. Whether I do that or not, whether that's what I do, I just don't know.
Final question. You're former House GOP Chief Policy Director. I think it's more likely than not that perhaps the president will be from one party and the House will be from another party. I don't know about the Senate. What are the prospects of them working together?
Well, I think if we just look at where the polls are now, and again, there are 15 days left, so I suppose anything could happen with this race. But if the polls are where they are now on November 8th, then Hillary Clinton is likely to win, unfortunately. And I believe the Republicans are likely to lose a number of seats in the House, but retain their majority. And the Senate, I just don't know. I wouldn't venture a guess there. But if that's the case, I expect that Hillary Clinton will continue to try to expand the size of government by taxing and spending more. She will do all of the things we know she's going to do. She will appoint liberal judges. She will appoint our justices. She will not restrain the rate at which the executive branch is creating rules and regulations with the force of law, with no input from the people's elected representatives in Congress. This is what we will get from Hillary Clinton. And this is why Mindy and I warned against nominating Donald Trump. We knew he would not be able to compete. But what I would expect is for House Republicans at least to put up some fight against Hillary Clinton. Although, you know, the power of Congress has drifted to the executive branch so much that they don't have a lot of power left. So their ability to stand up to Hillary Clinton or to Trump, I think, is very, very limited. So what we're looking at is the expansion of the federal government, most likely. And that, again, is why we come back to needing to start from square one and build a new conservative movement.
We are out of time. We've been talking with independent candidate for president, Evan McMullen, who is possibly on the cusp of doing something no third-party candidate has done in decades. He may win a state. That state is Utah. You can find out more about him at evanmcmullen.com. Evan McMullen, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Bye now.